Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. It's become a new kind of tradition. Today's the day we argue about whether to celebrate Columbus Day or follow cities like Somerville and Cambridge who've rechristened it Indigenous Peoples Day. But we can also use it as an occasion to better understand the rich, complex world that Columbus stumbled upon in 1492 and the sometimes serendipitous, sometimes devastating chain of events that followed this clash of civilizations. Joining me now is a writer who has looked carefully at both sides of this world-changing event, with two books aptly named 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus, and 1493, Uncovering the New World Columbus Created. Charles C. Mann, welcome to Radio Boston.
A pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. I mean, you wrote this book, the first one, 1491, this phenomenon of a book, later a miniseries, about the sophistication of the pre-Columbus encounter world. Just start by giving us a sense of what the Americas looked like in 1491.
Well, say that you were somehow in an airplane flying over the Americas at that time. You might start here and you'd see these sort of coalitions of villages sort of gathering together into sort of tiny empires all over New England. And then if you went further south, you'd see the remains of Mississippian villages and cities centered around these large earthen pyramids. Further south than that, you'd have the Aztec empires, it's called the Tarascans, these sort of much more larger centralized states, going to all the way to the west coast of South America, where you have the Inca Empire, Tahuantinsuyo, as it was called by them, which was the largest centrally organized state in the world at that time, had the largest road system, enormous thing that stretched equivalent from Stockholm to Cairo. And then in the Amazon, you have these kind of ring cities, these sort of coalitions of cities that we don't know very much about, but we're learning a lot more now. So it was a thriving, bustling place full of millions of people doing interesting things.
So yeah, two key questions, I guess, about these civilizations. One, the size. The other, how advanced they were. I think we'll start with the latter one. I mean, how advanced were these cultures of the Americas? What kinds of technologies? What kinds of norms of, I don't know, city management?
Well, they were very different from their European counterparts. And so when you talk about how advanced they are, it depends what the yardstick is. For instance, no question that Europeans were much better at, sort of machinery like pumps and that sort of thing and the use of steel. On the other hand, I think you could make a pretty strong argument that many of the native societies of the Americas had much more sophisticated agriculture than Europe did. There's no evidence of the kinds of frequent and recurring famines that were sort of the European stock and trade in the 15th century. And so that kind of land management, much more sophisticated. They also had sophisticated metallurgy, particularly in Mesoamerica and the Incas, but it was to use metals in ways that were completely different. You had these, they valued them for their ductility, for their bendability rather than their strength. And so you had these very elaborate metallurgical techniques to make metal shiny and that sort of thing, which are just as scientific and just as technological, but for completely different purposes. And I think that would be the way to understand them, societies that thought about different kinds of technology in different kinds of ways.
And so then the next question, how big, how many people? I mean,
well, this is one of those historical debates, right? And the real answer is nobody really knows. The typical estimates are between 40 and 60 million in the Americas at the time of Columbus.
40 and 60
very roughly,
million.
Yeah, which is very roughly equivalent to the population of Europe at that time. I should note that these estimates of native population keep rising. And as a personal guess, I wouldn't be surprised if it shook out around 80 million in the Americas at the time of Columbus.
I know some scholars have pushed back against your book, suggesting the number, you kind of reach for some of the higher numbers. Let's, if you were at a conservative number, like what's the lower bound in your mind of how few it could be?
Well, as I said, the typical scholarly estimates are on the order of 40 to 60 million. So perhaps 40 is a kind of a lower bound, 60 being an upper bound. And that is, I'm just noting that the historical pattern that if you'd gone 20 years ago, you would have had a different range and would have been lower. And so the numbers keep, creeping up.
So, I mean, 40 million people, that's not sparse, especially if they collect themselves into cities and towns and empires. Yeah?
Yeah, some of the Americas were very densely populated. Mesoamerica, which is, you know, sort of Mexico and Central America, you know, the central part of that around what is now Mexico City is some of the most densely populated terrain on Earth. And similarly, we've recently found through these sort of LIDAR examinations of the Maya societies in the Yucatan Peninsula and further south that they were just also incredibly densely populated, that there was a kind of giant megalopolis over that whole area, you know, in about 800 AD.
So you mentioned
this. So
you
are talking about.
No, finish your thought.
You know, big societies, big scale societies.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned this LIDAR technology, which is amazing. So, right, the team of researchers with a Guatemalan nonprofit, PECNUM, they discovered, so they fly in a plane and, you know, they use sort of lasers and try to map out lost buildings, structures, right?
What's under the tropical canopy, because there's a forest there now.
Right. So, and what they found was like a series of highways connecting cities, complex infrastructure for large agricultural projects. I mean, we have some here, for instance, here's Francisco Estrada Belli. He's the project's co-director, and he talked to CBS this morning about the discovery.
Part of the jungle we thought were empty are full of cities and small towns and amazing things that we didn't suspect were there.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a new discovery, but it dovetails in some ways with what you've been saying about the pre-Columbian Americas.
And it's not just me. I'm a reporter. I'm talking about archaeologists. And basically everywhere that they've looked, they found more than had previously been thought. And you can do this in a small way yourself. If you go to, you know, the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico and go to any of the ruins, you'll see that there's an area that's been, you know, reconstructed and it has grass and so forth. And if you just go over the edge of the park and walk in the forest, as I did a few times with archaeologists, you can just walk for miles and you're walking over people's houses. So they knew already that the cities that we sort of see in these parks, you know, Chichen Itza and so forth, are just a fraction of what's out there. And what the LIDAR people tried to do is to take this knowledge and make it systematic. And they found that in the area that they looked at, which is a couple thousand square kilometers, they found evidence of 9 to 11 million people. And that's just a part of the central Mayan homeland.
Okay, so then Columbus arrives. Tell me a little bit about this man, Columbus, the man, the myth, the legend.
Well, he's born roughly 1450 in Genoa from a middle-class background that he was intensely ashamed of for his entire life. He leaves, by his own account, to go sailing when he's about 10 years old. And we have no evidence that he ever went back to Genoa. He ends up seeing actually quite a bit. He's in England. He may have been in Iceland. He sails off the coast of West Africa. He marries a pretty wealthy woman in Portugal, lives there, and gets somehow possessed of the idea that you should be able to sail west and encounter China and Japan. And he brings this, and that he should do it. And he brings this idea to the Portuguese court, and they quite rightly laugh at him.
Well, it's a crazy idea, right? We know how knew how big the globe was. They knew he couldn't sail that far.
Right. They knew that what he was proposing to do is, if you think about it, sail across the entire Atlantic, then what we now know as the American landmass, and the entire Pacific. And they knew how long that was, and they knew that 16th century ships simply couldn't carry enough supplies and water to make it that far. It would be a little bit like, you know, if you have a child and they came to you and said, I'm going to take my Volkswagen Bug and drive across the entire United States on one tank of gas. You would say, what?
But he doesn't care.
It's just not going to work.
He finds the financing, he does it, and he sets off this incredible chain of events.
Yeah, he goes to Spain, and they turn him down for the same reasons, because it's crazy. But he has this sort of messianic sense that he's acquiring of himself as a world historical figure. And he's kind of a nut. And what he has in his head, and he talks about this more and more as he gets older, is the idea he's going to make this great discovery. He's going to bring this huge amount of wealth to Spain. And the king and queen of Spain are then going to launch a new crusade, seize Jerusalem, and create a new heaven on earth. And it's all going to be because of him.
Well, in some ways, his acts do turn out to be pretty dramatic, if not messianic. I mean, he unleashes a set of historical changes virtually unparalleled. Some of them devastating for the people who were living in the Americas, others of them enriching, particularly the agriculture of the rest of the world. How do you see this sort of chain of events following his quote-unquote discovery?
Well, these, if you think about it, you know, the Americas, you know, our hemisphere and the hemisphere of Europe and Asia and Africa have been separate for tens of millions of years with, you know, almost no communication between them. And what Columbus does is he brings these two hemispheres, these two halves of the earth together, and he creates an ecological, social, political, economic explosion that, you know, rockets through the ages and that we're still living in the echoes of. So it's a huge event in the history of the world. So in that case, you're absolutely right. He was destined to be a world historical figure. It's just not the one that he thought he was.
And I mean, just to spell it out, the impact on the Americas we think about in terms of disease and devastation, yeah, and the impact back in Europe, you think about it, kind of very interesting text, about potatoes, tomatoes, beans, chili peppers.
Right. All these foods. Now, Europe can barely feed itself. You know, they have these recurrent waves of famine. There's a great French historian, Fernand Braudel, who sort of counted them up. And he calculated in a couple centuries before Columbus, there was a continent-wide famine. I think it was on the average of every 11 years. And you're talking about major deprivation. So that there is, you know, real problems in Europe. It was a poor, desperate place. And these bringing potatoes in there for northern Europe, basically because potatoes are tubers and they can grow as big as they want to, whereas cereals like wheat are on thin stalks, potatoes are more productive. You get more calories per acre out of them. And, you know, in the 18th century, you could get roughly four times as many calories per acre out of an acre of potatoes than you could out of an acre of wheat. And the result is, for the first time in history, Europe is able to feed itself. And this is what powers the later European empires. Meanwhile, the story is completely different in the Americas. Diseases that for historical reasons had never existed in the Americas arrive. And these are all the major killers, you know, smallpox, measles, influenza, you name them. And it's as if all the suffering and death that those diseases had created over the millennia in Europe and Asia and Africa happened in about 150 years in the Americas. And the consequences were catastrophic. It was the worst demographic disaster in the history of the human race.
Well, on that note, that's writer Charles C. Mann, author of 1491 and 1493. His most recent book is Wizard and the Prophet. Charles, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Zoe Mitchell, with help today from Eve Zuckoff and Kainat Khan. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Evan Horowitz. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.